How can you find, fund, and fix planet-sized problems? First, you need to be informed. And that starts here with the DOI Podcast.
Yes, it does, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome in 7/13/22, show number 65, if you're keeping track. Welcome into the most meaningful crypto conversation on the interwebs this evening. It's because it involves you. You're at the DOICast. We have some news this evening. How about UK courts allowing service of lawsuits via NFT? What? Twitter sues Elon Musk over acquisition dispute. India bringing it in with a Union Bank to open a metaverse in the virtual lounge. That's pretty awesome. So tonight we're going to have special guest Kyler 56 with us from the Sporos DAO. That is going to be an awesome conversation. We're going to do that and news together. Mr. Corey Fico, how are you doing today?
Oh man, I was on the edge of my seat. I thought Dale was about to do the podcast with
us. You know, sometimes Dale wants to slip in, right? He really wants to be here, but I had to put him aside for today.
Yeah, it's probably the best for all of us.
Well, I don't know about that. Dale's pretty entertaining.
Dale is entertaining, I'll give you that. Yeah, let's jump straight into this news. That way we can bring Kyler up and deep dive into that Sporos, because I'm excited about that.
Dude, that's going to be an exciting conversation for sure. So UK court allows serving of legal documents via NFTs. And to me, just off the headline when I read it, I said, oh no. I said, this isn't good. If you thought you were, I mean, my gosh, how many court paperwork gets lost now? Imagine just it going to your wallet and you not checking it. You've been served.
Yeah, that is interesting. That's extremely interesting, especially whenever paired with the fact that if you, like me, are on somebody's radar because your name was somewhere, you're getting all kinds of tokens sent to your wallet that are some of them real, some of them scams. Like if you actually touch them, they can, you know, cause issues or fish from you, etc. Now that said, I do understand why they would do it. So Phil, why do you think they would want to move over to NFTs as legal documents?
Well, to be honest with you, I think that they understand that the way that Web3 is coming in, there's going to need to be a way for people to interact, right? For entities to be able to interact with each other back and forth. And if your standard course of business is being done online, it's being done through the wallets, then it only makes sense that you can utilize that for legal documents also.
It does. It does. And I think it also solves the problem of anonymity. Well, the problem of legality with anonymity. This has been a big conversation in the Web3 world. One, about do you need to be doxxed? You know, documents, doxxed, you know. Do you need to be anonymous or do you need to be known? And if you aren't completely known, how are you held accountable? Like, how can you be pursued in court? How can you be criminally charged? And if you are, well, doing legal documentation through NFTs, then you can, and that at least attach that anonymous person with a court proceeding and therefore pull them into a real world court system. Now, addition to that, I also think it's interesting to ask the question, do we see it as a workaround for having to serve papers? Because you mentioned that yourself. There's an entire business towards tracking people down to serve them papers.
Sure.
And especially if we're in a near world of CBDCs where there's a government, like you are known to the government, and you have a wallet attached to your persons, and they know who you are, and it can be as simple as serving you an NFT. Or, I mean, do you consider that being served?
Well, whether I would consider it sufficient is not going to matter, right? Because if the court deems it as sufficient, then it's going to be. But I see a lot of problems with it. I see that there could be a lot of potential problems. One, claiming that you weren't served, right? So then they have to have evidence that you opened it, almost like a send receipt kind of thing where when someone opens your message, you know that they've read it. I mean, that's the only way I see of doing that, because just claiming that you dropped an NFT in somebody's wallet, isn't in itself going to be enough evidence that they know they've been served. Whereas with a court service, you're relying on the server basically filling out an affidavit saying, no, indeed, I did serve Joe on this day at this place.
Yeah, I would be very interested in the podcast chat for those of you who are listening live on Discord. I would be very interested to see what your thoughts are on the topic of being served court paperwork by NFT. I feel like we could take an entire podcast or four unpacking just this individual thing, which I know you and I talked about briefly before this, being able to do so. But my goodness, I feel like this opens up a lot of doors. I do see a lot of utility in it, though. And clearly there is an issue in a anonymous or pseudonymous or semi-anonymous situation in the Web3 space is how do you hold those individuals or groups accountable? Like if you have a legal entity formed as, like if you have a DAO formed as a legal entity, which we're going to be talking about, I'm sure it'll come up in conversation here today. And that DAO needs to protect itself against the actions of certain members, and it's structured in a manner in which it can. How does it serve that paperwork? How does it go about that? Or does it decide not to interact once it's a legal entity, decide to not interact with other members, mm-hmm. which can't be beholden to the same rules and governance they can?
Yeah. So you have to wonder that, is it possible to create an NFT or for, like, let's say the UK government to create an NFT that when they serve that NFT to your wallet and you don't respond to it, that it basically locks your wallet and requires you to answer to it?
I mean, it's possible that you could bake in something like that, especially mm-hmm. if you did it from a government agency.
I'm taking that back. I'm cutting that out.
So I do have to say that Shelly mentioned something in the podcast chat here is maybe what they do is they can attach the notice with an ape NFT or something to incentivize you opening it up.
That's all we need is all of the courts buying ape NFTs to send out. No wasteful spending there. Hey. Don't worry about it, folks.
Hey, I mean, there's something to be said about creating like bounties for tracking down individuals, like the same way they have the FBI's most wanted list, but you could do it for anonymous or pseudonymous people with NFTs attached to that. So you're attaching digital assets towards, you know, basically bounties in a digital world. I mean, that might be kind of fun being able to kind of leverage and play around with an idea like that and all the different tentacles which I could take.
Well, just give them the opportunity. They'll put some tentacles in there. So like you're saying, Corey, we could go on with this conversation for a while because there really is a lot to unpack there in the potential and also in the potential risk that I see. But let's jump on because we've got a lot of conversation to get to tonight. Ripple scores another win against the SEC as a judge slams the agency's hypocrisy. And to that, we give Ripple a big round of applause, because anybody that wins in court against the SEC, they've got something figured out.
I didn't even know it was possible.
Yeah. And now this is their second go around where basically they've come out victorious.
Yeah. I mean, it seems for those of us who've been in this space, it's been going on for years. And gosh, the SEC has been just relentless, but yet at the same time, Ripple just keeps on coming mm-hmm. out ahead throughout all of this. And every time that they do, it's another win, not just for Ripple, but for those who were scared or those who are already treading the waters for which Ripple is treading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, Corey, to round out the argument, do you want to highlight what the argument that Ripple is, you know, they're basically saying that they're not a security, correct?
Yeah. They're saying they're a utility coin, not a security.
Yeah. The SEC is saying you're a utility, so it's back and forth, and they're basically just trying to claim jurisdiction. And the courts so far are not siding with the SEC. So that's good news, I think.
Yeah, that is good news. That is amazing news. And for all of us, because if you're thinking about creating a DAO with a governance token, right, and that governance token has secondary values, like it has a monetary value on an open market for whatever reason, because people find contributing and being engaged in that community as valuable in some way, because the impact as connected to them is valuable. And if that governance coin has a value, then all of a sudden, is it a security? Well, this court case with Ripple could very well define how that looks in the coming years. Mm-hmm. And yeah. If it is, you can pretty much kiss DAOs goodbye.
Well, I mean, by that estimation, though, couldn't you carry over the notion that anything is a security? I mean, my car has a value. Do we register it as a security?
Well, if you were raising capital for a car company and you were leveraging the car as backing, mm-hmm. then I would say in that way, one might argue, you know, the case towards that. But in general, yes, I see where you're going with that. And of course, too, same thing with commodities and,
yeah.
you know, trading cards, the whole bit. But long story short, the entire case of crypto at large, not to put too much weight on Ripple here, but I kind of feel like a lot's riding on this. And it's really important for all of us to keep an eye on this. And right now, it seems like crypto is winning.
Yeah. Well, that's good. We'll see how it all pans out. But let's jump into another little bit of legal jargon. So Twitter sues Elon Musk over $44 billion acquisition dispute. Now, when I saw this, my first thought was, are they so, because, you know, they had a clause in there, right, where he could basically walk away with a $1 billion penalty. And he's basically saying he's not even paying that, if I understand correctly, because he's saying that they were not truthful in their disclosure. And my thought is, if he's right and Twitter takes them to court, then there's going to be discovery and he's going to get to see the information that he was trying to see anyways, or they're going to have to go into court and say, oh, well, we can't show that. Well, that's not good faith, right? So I really don't see how they have a way to win there unless they're willing to expose themselves completely.
Well, I think unfortunately for them, and this was actually well summarized by the tweet that Elon Musk made, which was a picture of Chuck Norris on one side of the chessboard was an entire set of chess pieces, and on the other side was Chuck with a pawn, and it said checkmate. And Elon posted it saying, like, hey, you know, go ahead, take me to court, you know, paraphrase, take right. me to court, because then I will have to find out, you're going to have to disclose the information which I was already asking for.
Yes.
And in that way, well, and then they still decided afterwards to go for it. And we'll see. I think ultimately, though, they were backed into a corner because at the time they didn't want it, but they talked about how Elon couldn't do it. And then it became real. And it's like, oh, well, you know, $44 billion. And they negotiated about whether or not they would do it. And then it came down to like where the bottoms dropped out so much. And especially if they present how much of the Twitter are bots. Basically, their only move is to post how much of Twitter is comprised of bots. To make an argument
75%.
For making it happen anyway. Yeah, because otherwise they're going to lose 50% of their value. They've already dropped a ton since that time.
Sure. I actually think that the amount when you... So Twitter seems to be mostly a cesspool of meanness. So did we really program these bots to be mean like this? I think this is a uniquely human characteristic. So maybe there's not that many bots.
Well, so to talk about that very briefly, because I know we definitely want to bring Kyler on here in just a very short moment. There's a lot of bots in theory because, well, for one, if you're in crypto, there's a lot of bots. People will create these bots to create interest around things and to drive people's engagement. If they see something going up and a bunch of people talking about it, they're going to follow it and, you know, buy the coin because they think that they're going to FOMO into something or ape into something because they want to get in on the sweet, juicy tendies. Well, in that way, those bots create that outcome. And bots are easy to create. In fact, they're so easy to create that people, whenever we were going through our whole journey of starting getting out there, and we still do occasionally get this, people be like, I can create 1,000 bots that will constantly tweet about whatever it is you're doing and repeating phrases and even talk back and forth, and I will create all those bots for you for $1,200. And it's like, gosh. And you know that they're going from, you know, project to project to project to project to project. And if you had no morals, that's what you would do to create fake engagement. Well, and the same could be said about political issues. So if you have a product that you want to hype up, especially crypto, if you have any political movement, you want to reinforce a false narrative that more people support or are against something, then you would do that with bots. You would create these conversations in a way that it creates this echo chamber of either reinforcing or disagreeing with whatever belief system. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, Phil?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think we see that happening all around us, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. Yeah. And in a place like Twitter, where it is very reactive to a negative behavior, a bot would do exceptionally well. And I know I've mentioned this in a previous podcast, but for those of you who aren't familiar, there is a documentary about Brexit where they talk about that being the first time that manipulation of the general public through social media, like targeted ads, bots, being using the changing the narrative to sway people's opinions on things.
Which way were the bots trying to work it?
Well, the idea was is that they were trying to reinforce that Brexit was good. They had the initiative, like they started using social media to kind of go, okay, we should do Brexit, and then created this entire narrative, like there's an entire movement behind it. And so that's what you would see over and over and over again. And then it created that echo chamber of whatever opinion that is. In that case, it was about Brexit. But since then, you can attach any political concept and you'll see it over and over and over again now. Mm-hmm. And
so eventually we're all going to have our own bot that identifies other bots. Right?
Yeah.
It's going to get messy.
Yeah. And then we're going to have to wake up in the morning. And we're going to have to look at it, go, am I a bot? And then one day you're going to become a cyborg and you're not going to know when, because enough of your parts are going to get changed out. You're like, oh gosh, I'm a bot.
Well, let me ask you this.
I guess there goes my rights.
Can social media platforms, I mean, they have the ability to know who is and isn't a bot, correct? Like this, they can't just hide these bots and they can't be seen by the admin, the administrators, and this kind of thing, correct?
Well, to that point, there are ways that you can detect it. And that's what Elon was trying to do. It doesn't talk about this, I don't think, in this article. But what he was trying to do is get full access, which was above and beyond what they already provide enterprise level, but they weren't allowing it to him, to be able to test the system and to run cycles through it to be able to determine, okay, which accounts were fake and not.
Because
there's bots.
So hold on. Is it your estimation that he knows that can be done?
Yes.
Okay. So if a company isn't doing that, shouldn't that tell us that they're interested in those bots being there? I mean, you would think that if they wanted to be any social media platform, like let's don't pick on Twitter, because we can throw Telegram and we can throw probably a bunch of them in there. If these bots are in there and they're not kicking them out, then they're utilizing them themselves. That's would be my estimation.
Yes. And the question, and then I think on this note, perhaps is okay if we skip the fourth bit of news and then bring Kyler up?
Yes.
So on that bit, the question is why? And all I have to do is say share price.
Right. Yeah. But as this gets to be seen, though, right? Like the more conversation that comes around this and people are going to start to understand this, that's not going to be good for business.
Yeah. Or they won't, or they'll drag it out so long. It'll become so complicated and people will become bored. And then there'll be another court case between, Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. And next thing you know, we've all forgotten about the fact that 40% of Facebook is bots and 60% of Twitter is bots. And we're being manipulated because we're being monetized on these free platforms.
Yeah.
We'll move on to something else because, Amber Heard will
remember,
say
if it's free, you're the product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On that note, you know who is not the product? You, whenever you get to listen to Kyler here from Sporos Dow, got a lot to say here. Kyler, bringing you on up.
Yeah, and gang, if you're listening to us over on Clapper or on Facebook and you would like to engage this conversation in a little more personal way, we invite you to come over to Discord and jump in the conversation, jump into the chat room, ask questions, get answers. Kyler, welcome up.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going fantastic today. Good. We appreciate you joining us, and we're excited to have the conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. This is really awesome.
Oh, the feeling is mutual here. And by the way, for those of you who are in Discord, I'm actually going to drop the website for Sporos DAO, which is, quite frankly, brilliant. I have to ask right off the bat the obvious question. I love the theme, but Sporos, the name, where did that come from?
Yeah, so I didn't come up with the name, but I've slowly really grown attached to it because I think it does perfectly represent what we're trying to do. So we're building a platform to help other DAOs launch, essentially. And we're doing that by coming up with a sweat equity distribution system and a lightweight legal wrapper. And these are designed only for for-profit DAOs. But the connection to the name is that, you know, when mushrooms reproduce, they release spores, and those spores land on the ground and they create other mushrooms. And that's kind of what we're trying to do with DAOs. We want to be a DAO that helps other DAOs get started.
Yeah, that's absolutely beautiful. I was actually in a podcast with Felix from Movement DAO just earlier this morning, and we were talking about exactly that, just the role of launch pads, of places that build out ecosystems, being able to spread those spores, and how much Web3 needs that. So I guess ultimately, how did you get into this? Like, where was it that your engagement came into this space? How did you get into being a launch pad of for-profit DAOs and the sweat equity tokens and, you know, creating the lightweight legal wrappers? I mean, because this isn't a place you just land. I mean, there's had to be some kind of journey, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So I write a weekly newsletter on crypto and law called Around the Blockchain, and I was approached by two of the founders of Sporos after they had read a couple issues of the letter, and essentially what they said is they came up to me and they were having a lot of trouble getting attorneys to attach their name to this project. And I'm not an attorney yet. I'll be starting law school in the spring, but that kind of gives me some liberty to conduct legal research as a student without, you know, the fear of retribution or liability of attaching my name to something, because I can just perform that research from a student's lens, right, from an academic lens. So the two founders approached me, and they're former developers with Olympus, so that lent them some credibility in my book right away, and they said that they needed some legal research done into sweat equity distribution and LLCs taxed as C-Corps, primarily Ricardian Series LLCs, such as the one created by CaliDAO, which is actually, we're in partnership with CaliDAO, we're building on their platform, and our operating agreement that we're coming up with is essentially an amendment to their current operating agreement. We've just, you know, switched some things around and added some language that makes the operating agreement specialized for for-profit startup DevCo SaaS companies. And it was kind of serendipitous the way that I got involved into the project. They just kind of DM'd me on Twitter, and the next thing I knew, I was, you know, kind of working full time there. It happened really quickly in a matter of like 3 days. So
it seems like nowadays, as fast as things move in the Web3 space, 3 days, 3 days is a long time. A lot can happen in 3 days.
Yeah, you're a veteran 3 days in. And also, you also yes, just proved that not only bots are on Twitter.
Right. Oh. Right.
Yes, there are bots and 40.
I'm one of the 3% of real humans on Twitter. Happy to represent.
Well, Kyler, do we really know that? Do you really know that? Maybe you're a bot too.
That's true. I could just be a bot LARPing as a human being.
Hey, how do we know? Now, so to that point, so you said sweat equity tokens. Phil, I know you had a ton of questions. I mean, that's definitely a path that we've talked about a lot. Do you want to pick that up and run with it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this part of the conversation is narrowly approaching a bridge that we're looking to cross ourselves, right? As we figure out implementation of divvying out shares of coins potentially based off of your contributions or what you're doing. There's so many questions that really go around that. One of the main ones that I hear is, how do you determine what a project or what time is worth, right? Because there are, you know, there are folks that work and their work is valued at $50 an hour or $100, or attorneys that sometimes are $1,500 an hour. So how do you balance that out? Like, where do you get that information from?
Yeah, so we're actually developing an MVP project management system to kind of assist in that area, but we're also looking for other tooling systems to assist with that question, because that is one of the biggest recurring questions, right? How do you validate what people are doing? Mm-hmm. They may come up to you with their rate and they say, to get paid using the system, you have to create a proposal, and we're trying to find a way to mitigate that and make it a smoother process. But right now, you create a proposal in the DAO. You say, I worked X hours, I completed Y objectives, I'd like to be paid the product of those two, which is Z. And then you create your proposal, and we need to come up with a system to better validate that, which is what our MVP is meant to do. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be bad players, right? There are going to be people that try to game the system. So we're actively inviting people to test out our software and to poke holes in it. So that, if you find a hole, then we can fix that hole, right? We can patch it.
Yeah.
That's definitely something that we're still actively working on. And we think that after we launch and we get some use cases going, we're going to be using that data to better determine how to proceed.
Okay. When I look at another industry that uses rates, standardized rates, we look at like an auto mechanic, right? An ASE certified mechanic, if you're going to one of those kind of shops, they're going to have a book, right? And they're going to say, well, this alternator by this book takes 4.5 hours to change. And that's what they're going to get paid. Whether that takes them 6 hours or it takes them 2.5, they're still going to get paid that book rate. Is it possible to implement something like that, just using industry experts worldwide to kind of come to an agreement on, this many lines of code maybe should cost this much to write, or this kind of graphic design on average should take this much time, so that there's a way that's a little more uniformed as we travel around to all of these different DAOs? Because that's going to become a real question, right? Because then you end up with one DAO that's paying X to do a project, the other one is paying a different amount. And obviously that creates some competition, but it also creates some like vagueness in there where maybe you're not going to get paid what you're truly worth on this one, but at this one you will.
That's a fascinating proposition for sure. You're 100% right. There is a ton of ambiguity as to what the standard rate should be for, accomplishing these objectives, whatever they might be, whether it's on the consulting side, on the legal side, on the engineering side. I think it would be extremely helpful if there was some sort of framework that could at least give a general outline as to what compensation should look like for the completion of those tasks. But as of right now, we definitely don't have anything like that.
Yeah. So,
let's almost need like a payment DAO. Sorry, what was that?
No, I said we almost need to put together like a payment DAO, which brings in all of those opinions kind of across the world on what this, the median time spent on something is and what it's worth.
Yeah. That's fascinating as well. And I know that there's a DAO, I'm part of a massive group chat called the DAO Research Hub. And there was a post today. So I'm translating this knowledge with very little insight as to what it actually does. But there's a DAO called Labor DAO. And I understand that they're forming to help with collective bargaining and, kind of payment issues, essentially unionizing in the digital space. And I would be curious to see if they're working on something similar to that.
I hear a metaverse strike coming up.
Possibly.
Yeah. Well, so perhaps maybe to back up a little bit for those, because we've got people at different levels of either crypto curious, crypto confident, or crypto, let's just say, completely new. What is the idea of a sweat equity token anyway? What does that even mean? And why is it meaningful?
Yeah, so a sweat equity token, or an SET, it's kind of self-explanatory. It says that what you get in, or what you put in, what your contribution is, will reflect what your compensation is. And the reason we like this model is, one, it mitigates securities registration overhead. And it does this by, it kind of negates two arms of the Howey test, right? So The first arm that it negates is these tokens are non-transferable completely throughout the duration of our operating agreement, and at the end of our operating agreement, which is called a graduation event, those tokens do become liquid, and then they become transferable, and there will be securities registrations. But at that point, if you make it to that point, right, you're profitable. So at that point, I feel like companies will be willing to undertake the necessary registrations to get their money out, right, to get their equity. But so a sweat equity token, essentially your contributions, your inputs are going to directly affect what you get paid, and what you get paid is equity, which is ownership of a company, right? So at Sporos, we're eating our own dog food, so to speak. We've implemented this system and we use it ourselves. So every week when you create your proposal to get paid, as soon as that proposal passes consensus of the rest of the DAO, you receive your tokens, and in the Cali DAO and our sweat equity distribution system that we've developed, your percentage in the company will go up as your tokens go up, right? But the thing is, if you take a week off and everyone around you is working, let's say, you typically get 1,000 tokens a week or something, and so does John Doe next to you. He always gets 1,000 tokens per week. If you take the week off, but John Doe continues working, you will get diluted, right? Because his tokens will go up, his percentage of equity in the company will go up, but yours will go down because that's getting allocated elsewhere, right? So it incentivizes participation. And then outside of that, with the securities mitigation, there's no investment of money possible because they're non-transferable, so there can't be an investment contract. So that automatically disqualifies it from passing the Howey test. But in addition, there's no reliance on the efforts of others because all of your efforts are of your own agency. The only way to gain governance in these companies through equity is to put in the work. And so we feel like that really incentivizes meaningful contributions.
Okay.
How might you handle that with an existing project? Let's say that there was an existing project that said, okay, we are 60% into this. We've already done a lot, built a lot, grown a lot, but now we want to transition over to that. Is there any way to bring in the legacy contributors and have them receive that value, or is it always a start from zero kind of game?
That's a really good question. I think for right now, it's kind of a start from zero thing, right? We're building this product for early stage bootstrap startup companies, and essentially our goal is to help them survive the first 2 years, right? I think it's something like 80% of companies fail in the first 2 years, and I would imagine that's even higher for DAOs, because a lot of the times it's some guys and girls, whoever, that get together and they have an idea of what they want to do as a company, but they haven't actually built out a team or created any kind of framework, right? They don't have a marketing team. They probably don't have all their developers. They don't yet have a legal wrapper. And so what we want to do is provide a lightweight legal wrapper. These companies cost less than $500 to start, this LLC model. So it's very affordable on the front end. And then we want to alleviate the stress that comes along with cash flow of having to pay people directly with cash. And, on the other end, on the contributor end, if you're just getting paid in cash, but you feel like you're making meaningful contributions that should entitle you to equity or ownership of the company, that doesn't happen when you're getting paid in cash. So we're trying to provide that and keep companies, first of all, legally compliant with a lightweight wrapper that limits liability for all token holders, and also alleviates some of the taxation and securities considerations that are presently popping up all over, as you alluded to earlier, talking about Gary Gensler and the SEC.
So if you were to think about, because a number of them pop off the top of my head just because being in this space, but if you had to imagine a community that would be perfectly suited for this, what kind of DAO pops up in your mind, Kyler, whenever you think about kind of who would use this framework and what they would do with this?
Yeah, so we're building this model only for-profit DAOs. So your intention has to be to make money in this space to use this wrapper. It really doesn't fit with a nonprofit wrapper. I work with the LexStyle Clinic as well, so I work with clients that are, you know, like new to Web3 and they're looking for some kind of legal wrapper to put on their company. And I work with nonprofit DAOs all the time in that regard. And this model is definitely not for them. So I guess the ideal company would be maybe a development company that's building DAO tooling systems, or an NFT project that wants to release a series of NFTs, but they want to put together a design team and a marketing team and, you know, kind of get all their ducks in a row before they actually launch their product. So my favorite way to describe Sporos is to say that we're kind of like a rocket launch pad, right? I know launch pad is kind of an overused term in this industry, but we really are. If you bring us all the pieces of a rocket, we'll help you put it together. We'll help you put gas in the ship. And then when you graduate or launch away from the pad, our operating agreement dissolves and you are expected to rewrap as a corporate wrapper. And eventually on the back end, we want to design that wrapper as well.
Interesting. You know, Corey, maybe either one of you might want to answer this, but you've said something a couple times, and for people who are listening, and this will be released as a podcast over most of the platforms. You mentioned the Howey test, and I think this is something that most people don't understand. And I think it might be good to spend just a couple minutes for whichever one of you would like to answer. I know, if Corey, I know you have answered this before. I've heard you answer it. Kyle, I don't know if you want to take a stab at answering in kind of simplistic terms. What is the Howey test?
Corey, do you want to go or do you want me to take a shot at it?
Yeah, I would say go and then ultimately take this and then ultimately talk about why. One, I'd like to hear talk about the Howey test, but two, more importantly, I think that's going to reinforce a narrative of why you'd actually want to create a legal wrapper at all. And I think that that really reinforces the narrative of why Sporos matters.
Yeah, definitely. So the Howey test is like the end all be all for the SEC when it comes to determining whether or not an asset is a security. And it typically has, well, it always has four arms. And we don't have to get into this, but the language has evolved over the year to become more and more expansive as the SEC has gotten, I guess, quote unquote, greedier and greedier for regulatory authority. But the first prong is an investment of money, right? So that's the part that we absolutely stay away from at Sporos. You can't buy your way into equity ownership in any of these companies. The only way to get equity is to put in the work, you know? So there's no investment of money at Sporos. The second prong of the Howey test is a common enterprise. So that means that the company that you're investing in or that your security would be emanating from is a group of people with a common goal, essentially. The third prong is the expectations of profit. So we definitely do fit into that column because we are fully expecting these sweat equity tokens to be exchangeable at some point, just not during the duration of our operating agreement, right? So essentially, we want to create a sandbox that you can build in safely and in a legally compliant way until you're ready to take on those registration efforts and, you know, start making money. And then the fourth and the final arm is the efforts of others. And this is the part of the language that has actually evolved since, I think that the Howey test came out in like 37 or 47. So it's a very old test, and it was actually kind of funnily based on an orange grove where a guy was selling plots of his orange grove or renting out plots of his orange grove, and you would buy the plot and then he would farm the plot and you would split the money. And the Supreme Court, they determined that that was a security. But when you're using sweat equity, if the only way to get governance or to get your equity in the company is by your own efforts, then it's not solely from the efforts of others, or as it's now defined, just the efforts of others. So it used to have the word solely in there, and they removed that word, and it doesn't seem like taking one word out of a definition would mean much, but removing that one word has greatly expanded the SEC's authority.
Yeah, now I think that that's pretty funny if you actually think about each of those individually. Anytime you engage in any effort, you're investing. Now, you may not be investing money, but you are investing your intellectual capacity your energy, your time. And in those ways, money is just a different form of kind of like how you might store the things that you would provide in other places, your own personal services, if you will. Now, the investment of money, I think that it's clear how you can separate from that one, of course. Now, the common enterprise, and that one's always, I've always found that one really funny, because you could kind of argue people at a flea market are in a common enterprise. You know, they all share the common goal of either trying to sell their wares at the flea market or coming to which to peruse. And you could argue that any collective group, you have to have some clear vision for where everyone's going. So it seems like that's kind of a blanket term. Expectations of profits, I think that one's pretty obvious. Now, let's talk about that a little bit on the why solely. Like, what was the move and on why they took out the word solely derived from the efforts of others to just being derived from the efforts of others? Like, what were they getting at?
Yeah, it's kind of sneaky the way that they did that. So when the language or the word solely used to be in that definition, it meant that the effort or the profit, the expectation of profit had to be derived only from the efforts of others, right? So if you were involved in helping that happen, helping that profit to come to life in some capacity outside of employment, then that would disqualify you from that arm of the Howey test. And you have to pass all four arms to be considered a security. Well, the SEC didn't like that because, you know, people were getting tangentially involved in product or projects to kind of, you know, escape through that loophole. So they removed the word solely, and now it's just on the efforts of others. Now, that can also include some effort from yourself, but it still has to be majority from the efforts of others, which would be the company that you're investing in.
And where does Sporos come in all this? Like, what would happen if somebody came in, and I know you've talked about it, but to try to summarize it maybe for those who are very, very unfamiliar with the Howey test, or very unfamiliar that there is a way to create a legal wrapper on a DAO. How, if I were getting into a DAO, either one with a legal wrapper or one without, what would that mean to me individually?
Well, the thing is, if you're operating without a wrapper and you are found to be issuing securities illegally, you're going to pay some really big fines, right? There's going to be punitive action that's taken against you by the SEC, and it could, you know, potentially disrupt your project to extremes. A lot of the times it results in the liquidation of companies, in fact. So it's very important to, you know, it's kind of a tough line, right? Because one of the inherent principles of decentralization and of DeFi at large is, you know, we want to get away from regulations. We want to live outside of the proverbial grid that's been created and that's caused so much, you know, turmoil throughout the years for people that are looking for ways to use capitalism to their benefit, right? And so, could you repeat the question again, Corey? I'm sorry, I may have gone on a tangent there.
Well, I think you definitely covered it from an organizational perspective. Is if you don't have a legal wrapper and you go through this process, especially in a meaningful way, that puts you at risk. And by creating a legal wrapper, especially one that goes through the process of negating the issues of the Howey test, that protects you to continue on your vision. So I think that's powerful, and I'm glad that you clarified that. One of the things that's come up from the individual side of things is we've heard a lot of talk, and Adam Miller was one of the first to bring this up on our podcast, and this was, I think, podcast number 3. And he's pretty awesome. He's over at MyDAO. For those of you who are interested in incorporating a nonprofit, mm-hmm. we would recommend that you go over to MyDAO. You mentioned DOI, 10% off getting incorporated in the Marshall Islands. Give your DAO corporate personhood. Now, one of the things that came up in that conversation was that people working collectively towards a goal is by, if you don't give it a frame, is automatically defined as a partnership, or at least it could be, depending on how they are operating. And that would, and if you're part of a partnership, that gives you legal liability on an individual level to be able to be attacked in the case of the Tao acting in a way that maybe even unbeknownst to you, but it did something that was, you know, either was indebted in a certain way or did something criminally, but that gives you liability potentially on a personal level. Now, what are your thoughts kind of on that? And ultimately, does wrapping this in this with Sporos Tao, does that help on an individual level as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're 100% correct. If you don't form a legal wrapper of your own volition and you do end up in a court for whatever it is, you know, whether it's for paying off debts or for criminal action, if you're defined as a partnership, which is the default definition, yes, you are liable for the actions of the company. So at Sporos, we mitigate that by forming our wrapper is a Delaware LLC. It's a Ricardian Series LLC. It's built off of the Cali DAO Master Series. So Cali actually handles all the overhead registration for their LLC. And what you do is you mint a Ricardian Series LLC from their smart contract. And you don't have to worry about any of the overhead of like talking to the state of Delaware or any sort of that kind of overhead initially. So that part is very nice, and that's why these DAOs or these LLCs, such as the Sporos Equity LLC, can be created in, you know, 15 to 20 minutes for under $500. But the LLC offers individual token holders liability. It severs you from the actions of the company unless you are, you know, directly acting on behalf of the company, and those actions can be traced back to you. But that stuff gets really messy, and that has to be interpreted by a court. So as a general rule, you are protected as far as liability wise from the actions of the company as a token holder.
Brilliant. Now, we like to engage in the podcast chat for those who come into Discord as much as we can, just because for one, we love the people who take the time to come in here. Of course, we love those who listen on Spotify and iTunes and those who listen live on Clapper and Facebook, of course, but we'd like to engage whenever we see great questions. And Jack from DeSci World asks a question I think that a lot of people would be asking. It's a, why would a DAO fall under the jurisdiction of the SEC if it's a worldwide DAO? Could the argument be made that the DAO not being headquartered in the U.S. Gives it some type of protection against SEC scrutiny?
It can and it can't. So it gets pretty messy there. The IRS has been very, very clear that, let's say, first of all, I want to shout out the guys at MyDAO, Adam, Aaron, and Leo. Love those guys. They're doing amazing things with nonprofit wrappers, and I know they're working on a for-profit wrapper in the Marshall Islands as well. But let's say, for the sake of this theoretical, that you form a nonprofit or some kind of company in the Marshall Islands, but all of the development is being done in the United States. Well, the IRS has said if we see that, we're going to count all the development that's being done on domestic soil as taxable, as a U.S. taxable event. So even if you form in the Virgin Islands or the Marshall Islands or the Dominican Republic, not the Dominican Republic, but, you know, wherever you might form these offshore entities, unless your team is moving to that island and actually doing the development there, the IRS is going to count all of your U.S.-based development as a taxable event. So I don't think that opens you up to SEC interpretations or jurisdiction, but it definitely opens you up to IRS jurisdiction as far as taxation goes.
Yeah, I would say to take what you said and to try to package it in the simplest way possible to those who are kind of wondering, if there's a government who can see monetization from your efforts, they're going to go after the money, because at the end of the day, that's the fuel to the machine. And if you're making money, either as an individually or as an organization, they're going to go after it. Now, if you're completely outside of that, then yeah, that's a whole nother conversation. If you don't live in the States, you don't operate in the States, and you are whatever country that you and your team members are in don't have the same kind of rules, then it would be case by case by whatever those laws are there. And I'm sure that you would probably second this, Kyler. is that at that point in time, you should probably look into local laws and make sure that you're compliant with those.
Yeah, definitely. I would always encourage wherever you feel is best to incorporate your DAO, your company, I would encourage you to do very careful research as to the laws of that jurisdiction.
So whenever you think about Sporos DAO in the future, the idea of being able to give people a launch pad, give them a wrapper that protects them now, allow them to grow to the point where they can be in a financial position to launch and to do all the things that make them compliant and to make whole all their contributors and to transition from the sweat equity tokens to actual equity. And it sounds like a very, very beautiful mission. What's the vision in all this? Where do you hope that this goes? If you could snap your fingers and you had the, you know, Thanos, you had the gauntlet, you could snap your fingers and Sporos could be anything in 10 years. What are you hoping the outcome from all this will be?
I think the vision would be that we are the, you know, kind of the de facto platform from which DAOs would be launched. We want to create a way for these companies that may not exactly know what they're doing yet, but they have a dream. We want to help them see that dream through, right? We want to help them realize that dream. And I think we do that by creating a cost-effective, lightweight legal wrapper that creates a truly equitable environment. And we also leave a lot of the language dynamic in the operating agreement and in the smart contract. So if your idea of proportional allocation of equity is different than ours, you can adjust, you know, whether it's 2 coins per dollar or, you know, however you want that to look on your end. If you want to adjust your idea of what consensus looks like within your company, that's dynamic as well. So we just want to create a platform that can help other people achieve their dreams without the fear of, you know, getting rugged by liability or by the bad actions of bad players within your DAO. And another thing that I think the coolest thing that we do is when these LLCs are formed, using our operating agreement, the first thing that happens immediately after signing this operating agreement into effect is that the founding members delegate all of their governance rights to the smart contract. So they essentially remove themselves as managing members, and all of that governance authority goes to the smart contract. From there, that governance is redistributed to all token holders. So it completely levels the playing field. There is no hierarchical structure at all. Everyone is playing from the same field. And if you want more governance, you have to work for it.
So Kyler, I've got a few more questions here, but since we're running up on time, Phil, I'd like to hand it over to you perhaps to ask maybe some of your closing questions before I round out with mine.
I'll tell you what, Corey, why don't you keep going on where you're going, the road you're going down?
So, Kyler, I love all of this. And in general, it's spectacular. The one thing that I guess I'm still kind of fleshing out the details on, and I imagine that perhaps you are too, or maybe there's clarity here, is we talked a bit about that this is definitely a launch pad for new projects that are building and to make that transition and to kind of build the rocket and launch. What do you do if during that process you have different people contributing, not just different amounts of time? I understand the different levels of those different skill sets will be valued at different contribution levels, but also contributing money. Not money as much as an investment, but just the necessary fuel to build what needs to be built, to pay for software programs and equipment and whatever travel and whatever it might need to be paid for, because there's lots of things that need to be paid for. How do you account for that in all this? Is there, you know, do you create like separate sub agreements that go into effect whenever the transition is made from, you know, non-Howie compliant or not necessary to be Howie, you know, it passes the Howie test to now needing to be compliant with the Howie test? Or is there some other way to kind of grapple with that? Like if you have somebody who not only contributes their time, but also brings $100,000 to the table or $1 million to the table, not so much as that as an investment, but as necessary fuel. How do you handle something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's been something that we've been wrestling with for a while. So the solution that we've come up with is these governance tokens are ERC-20 tokens, and throughout the life of our operating agreement, there can be absolutely no transferability of those tokens, right? So if you want to contribute money to the company, you can do so, but you won't receive any equity for it. If you did exchange money for these equity tokens, that would trigger what we call a graduation event, and it would dissolve our operating agreement and the LLC wrapper. So the only time to do that at a large scale would be at the time of a graduation event, right? Which has to pass proposal. So if somebody does approach the company and say, hey, I want to invest $1 million in your company, that's all fine and dandy. But to do that, it would have to pass proposal of the DAO at large, and they would have to be prepared for the actions they would have to take after that, right? Because our LLC would then dissolve, and they would have to rewrap in a new wrapper that would be legally compliant with the SEC, dependent on what their product is, right? And it would still have to be compliant regardless for the exchange of the sweat equity tokens that would then be considered securities. Now, a way that we can get around that a little bit, and I'm not sure how much I want to encourage it, would be to contribute money that doesn't reflect equity. But you could mint a second token of some sort or create separate treasury vaults, and you could potentially invest that way. But really, we kind of want to discourage people from that because it does make the water a lot muddier as far as SEC registrations go. And you kind of have to tacitly follow these rules that we're setting forth in order to remain within this legal wrapper. But the point is that if your company is successful enough and is generating enough traction that people are looking to invest in you, we at Sporos think that we've done our job, right? If you're ready to take on that amount of investment and really launch your product and start making money, then at that point, we would happily like to see the bird leave the nest, right? We want the baby bird to leave. And as I said earlier, eventually we would like to design the next wrapper that these companies move into, whether that's an S-Corp, a C-Corp might be. Our LLC is taxed as a C-Corp, I should mention that. So it's not taxed as a partnership, and that alleviates a lot of the taxation considerations. So in essence, you would already be used to functioning as a C-Corp, and I think that would be a natural transition for most of these companies.
Now, one of the things that was brought up in the podcast chat, which DAO Steve, he brought up a very valid point that you could create a loan instrument, and attached to that loan instrument could be an interest rate of some kind, whatever that scale might be to correspond with the risk. And then perhaps in the event of graduation, to reconcile the loan, the remaining loan could result in some kind of equity. I added the second part to what Steve said. What are your thoughts on part one about attaching, you know, loans to the lightweight wrapper? I would imagine that you'd be good with that, but I'd like to hear. And two, having inside of loan agreements, so there's a loan agreement that says that I have the right. So whenever someone creates a loan, you collateralize a loan. Could you not collateralize that loan on the organization for which the loan is placed?
Yeah, that's really interesting, and we haven't really explored that very much. We've been, you know, so focused on just getting this thing ready to go. We have a number of people on our wait list that are waiting to enact this as soon as I feel that the OA is in an adoptable state. But yeah, that's a really interesting proposition, and I do on the surface think that has the potential to work. Another way that we've approached it is potentially offering warrants. So you could purchase a warrant that would entitle you to future equity of the company. It just wouldn't give you any current equity. And those warrants, the exercise and strike price would be determined at the graduation event.
Yeah, I do like the idea of the warrant. I also really like the idea of the loan too, because you could scale the loan. I mean, this is a common thing to have done. Like, businesses get collateralized on loans all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, an LLC does. And you could basically have the loan get paid off. And also, therefore, as the loan gets paid off, the obligation of the company ownership-wise to the loan can also get paid off. Meaning that if somebody were to give a $1 million loan that was not paid off, then maybe there's a certain collateralization rate for what that $1 million was, you know, attached to. But if it gets paid off entirely, maybe the, you know, at whatever interest rate, then it goes down to before the graduation period, then perhaps that turns into just a loan and there truly is no equity purchase with that initial cash infusion. Does all that make sense, Kyler?
It does. That actually sounds brilliant. Steve, thank you so much for bringing that up. I'm definitely going to put that in front of the team.
Yeah. Yeah. So to give credit where credit's due, collateralization side was me, but Steve, I really like the idea. it's a podcast, but Steve very, very aptly did put in the loan vehicles. So I have to give him credit for that as well too. Sweet. Yeah. Now that said, we've got a lot that we could continue to go on. How do people move forward? Like, can they move forward right now? I noticed that there's a wait list. If they want to move forward, what do they do? And B, what would that look like? What's that process? Like, do they reach out to you? Do they go on the website? Like, if someone's hearing this podcast and go, you know what, by golly, off I go. What next?
Yeah, so we're one of the main things that we're trying to do at Sporos right now while we're still getting things ready is we're generating a ton of educational content. We're trying to finish at least an article or a Twitter thread per day at the moment. And so we are putting together a lot of educational pieces as to, you know, how to start this DAO. But to just run you through it really quickly, you could either approach us directly or you could approach Cali. And we will be one of the drop-down options in the Cali DAO menu when you create their Series LLC. And regardless, you will have to go through Cali to create the LLC. So it's just you go to app.cali.io or XYZ, I can't remember right now. But you go to their platform, you select the Sporos Equity LLC option, which is designed for, as we've said a couple of times, for-profit DevCo SaaS startup companies. And from there, it's a pretty straightforward process. You kind of set the initial parameters of what your consensus is going to look like, who are your founding members, right? And once this LLC is ready, you would sign and adopt it. And at that point, the governance rights of the founding members would be transferred to the smart contract. And thereafter, they would be divvied out according to this sweat equity distribution system.
So per usual, Phil, we get someone like Kyler in here talking about an amazing project. It'd be easy to go way over on time. Is there anything you feel like we absolutely need to cover before we close this out?
No, I feel like we got a pretty good overview of what we need, you know, the next steps if someone wanted to get involved. A ton of information. And I think it's relevant to point out that, you know, sometimes we look at the Web3 space, the crypto space, and especially with cryptos, people may feel like they missed the boat. But here it is that we are just now coming to wrapping our heads around what a legal entity is in this space, right? Like, we're so new in it. I just like to point out to people, like, you are at the very beginning of something that is going to be grand and is going to be larger than any of us individually, right? We're just at the tip of the iceberg still. So very excited to see the things to come in the future and more innovative solutions like this being put together, bringing people into it kind of in a safe way, right? Because if you're not wrapped in some kind of legal entity, then you're going into it just guns a-blazing, there's going to be problems. So, or at least large potential for problems. So I love to see these kind of solutions coming up, and super happy that you came on the show with us today. Very insightful.
Yeah, guys, thank you so much for your time. And I'm looking through our content curation right now, and on Monday we will be releasing a presentation that will walk you through step by step how to deploy not only any kind of DAO using Cali, but specifically a Sporos Equity LLC. And I'll be sure to post that in the chat on Monday.
Yeah, awesome.
Brilliant.
Awesome. Yeah. Corey, do you have some other questions that we want to get into before we start wrapping it up?
Oh, gosh, so many. Kyler, we could keep this conversation going. Let's just, to Phil's point.
Let's just do a marathon
tonight. If you're listening.
Let's just go three more hours.
Yeah, let's just do it.
When do you guys say 24 hours? Or?
No, this is not a Jerry Lewis marathon. just 4 hours total.
Yeah, we've actually, we're working towards that. That's the vision. One of these days, sooner or later, I hope to see 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, yep, around the world. Not just, not by Phil and I and you, Kyler, not the three of us, but the collective of all of us. We're ushering in a meaningful Web3 that's impactful, yeah, ethical, and sustainable, and doing it through education, empowerment, and communities. And in that way, you know, we'll get there, but there's plenty more to talk about. But I can't emphasize enough that, to Phil's point, if you're listening to this for the first time, you feel like you missed the boat, you haven't. Yeah. Get involved, get engaged. If you like what you heard, here's Foros DAO. Join the community, try to contribute, try to help. You can clearly, you know, get involved, get sweat equity tokens, which at the time of conversion, you know, may or may not be worth something. But nonetheless, at the same time, contribute to something meaningful. Join the conversation. Come in here to the DOI Foundation, of course. Join the Discord. You aren't too late. If anything, you're actually at the very beginning, yeah, where all these crazy ideas are starting to get formed into in real life organizations with real property rights and real communities and real rewards and opportunities to change the world.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. So, Corey, we're going to be back here Friday at 8 Central. What do we have on the chopping block for Friday?
Well, actually, I was thinking we could come back Monday because we actually have Kevin and Tony from Protocol DAO.
Awesome.
Underdog Protocol. They're going to be an interesting conversation for sure. So definitely want to deep dive into that, being able to create contributions.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, awesome. That'll be good. So another weekend off. This is the second week in a row that we're going to be off on Friday.
You guys are living the dream.
Living the dream. That's it. So, Kyler, you have any parting words for the folks?
I just want to thank you guys so much for your time, and what the DOI Foundation is doing is just so incredible, so amazing that you're, you know, creating this compendium of resources and, you know, helping give people a platform to show and showcase their dreams to the world. And I think that's such a beautiful, amazing thing. So keep it up, guys.
Awesome. We appreciate you being a part of it. Well, for gang, we're going to have to get out of here for sure. We're already a few minutes over. So we will be back here on Monday at 8 Central. Going to bring another fantastic show to you. So I hope everybody has a good rest of the week and weekend. So for myself, Phil Ward, for Kyler, and for Corey Fico, we invite you guys to be kind to somebody. It changes lives. And we look forward to seeing you back here Monday. Till then, take care.
Thanks for listening to the DOI Podcast. If you've enjoyed our time together, please rate and review the podcast. Together, we can achieve a brighter future. Help us bring this information to the world by sharing it with friends and family. The DOI Coin, the crypto coin for the people, by the people.